From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studios. Thank you very much for joining us today. We're talking about older adults today and the ways that we can engage with them and keep them enriched and their minds sharp while they're even in part of a communal living setting as they get older and need some more assistance in life. And then we'll later in the show hear about some interesting adults who are using their retirement years to continue to benefit the communities where they live. So stay tuned for that interesting conversation all about being a foster grandparent. Doesn't that sound interesting? But first, we're talking about engaging over older adults. And as I said, particularly those who are in residential facilities. And joining us to have that conversation are Emily Reitz and Hannah Weiser. Emily is a dementia care specialist with ADRC of Monroe County. Emily, thank you very much for joining us on Newsmakers today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. And Hannah Weiser is a life enrichment coordinator with Eagle Crest South in La Crosse. Hannah, thanks a lot for being here.
Thank you.
So I want to talk to each of you about some specific ways that your various outlets help the adults that are living in your communities. But let's talk just generally first. Hannah, let's start with you. Talk about just the importance of keeping adults engaged, keeping the mind active, no matter what kind of setting you're living in.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, what an interesting time to have this conversation, you know, as we're still in this pandemic that no one could have foreseen us still being in this far, a year and a half along. Firsthand, we've seen what not having activities does. You know, it's crucial to us here at Eagle Crest Communities that we stimulate those who live with us in various ways. So we're a community that offers services to those 55 and better, and that ranges all the way from independent living to our memory care communities. So cognitive, physical, social, emotional, spiritual stimulation are all super important. The biggest thing that we saw with COVID is we saw a huge decline in the social activities. Being in a residential facility, if there was a positive staff or a positive resident, you know, those units went on quarantine, and those activities became isolated. It became one-on-one or in-room. Visits with families became over a phone or a computer screen. And we're very excited to start to be able to open things back up a little bit. In terms of where to start, we always want to look at the cognitive self first. Everything can stem from the cognitive self. So if our brain isn't happy, we're not happy. So we start with engaging activities. We do the trivias, the word searches. Those are really the in-room activities. And then from there, you know, once we have the brain thinking and going, then it's, oh, well, maybe I can get up and move for 5-10 minutes today. Or maybe I'm going to go walk down the hall and visit with a neighbor of mine. It can affect a person's whole day just by having a 5-10 minute conversation.
Emily, what about from your perspective? Hannah's talking about using all of these different aspects of keeping adults engaged, and especially during COVID. If the opposite side of that coin is what happens when they're not engaged, how quickly can you see some of those cognitive functions begin to slip away?
That's a good question. And I think the best answer is that it really depends on you as an individual. It's hard to say because, you know, once you've met somebody with dementia or Alzheimer's, it's just one person. You know, it can't be said over across the board that everyone who we see with memory issues or cognitive decline is going to have those very same symptoms, which makes it incredibly difficult for doctors to diagnose. And I think that there's some hesitancy in the medical community with that, because there's not really a way to be sure, especially with Alzheimer's. You don't know for sure until after you're gone and they can actually examine your brain physically. So, you know, it can happen really quickly, though, in my opinion, that you start to see issues with your ability to maintain normal activities, and especially like Hannah was saying, your mood declines drastically. And, you know, it's going to be really interesting seeing some studies coming up here about how social isolation has affected people in these communities that are not living in their homes, or for the people who are living in their homes and haven't seen family or friends also, just what that does to cognition, especially in older adults.
In the last couple of years, we've heard, a year and a half or so, we've heard a lot about isolation and what can happen to people there. And really, it raises the awareness of how important it is for all of us, regardless of our personality type. Like, all of us need to be connected with people and to share experiences with people, and not just over the phone. We really need to be person to person with someone, whether it's a large group of people or a small group of people. But I'm wondering, we'll start with Emily, and then Hannah, I'm interested in your perspective too. But have you noticed differences between how isolation over a longer term might affect people who are known to really, really enjoy the company of others, or are more extroverted, versus people who have always kind of enjoyed solitude and that, and, you know, reading alone or, you know, being alone with their own thoughts?
Like I was saying earlier, you know, there's that difference between people who are living in these communities and people who are living alone. And I think initially people, and I can't say for sure because everyone's different, but initially the more introverted people seemed to be like, hey, this is the best thing ever. I don't have to interact with people and I don't have to come up with excuses. And that's so much less exhausting for me because I don't feel guilty about having to make excuses about going out and not going anywhere. But I think that over time, they also started to realize, hey, this is just as exhausting being alone with my own thoughts, because I think that's where a lot of negative self-talk gets in there, because people are sitting there just perseverating on their own thoughts. And, hey, do you remember this time 50 years ago when I made this silly decision? And they don't have anyone there to say, but that's not who you are anymore. Or, you know, I love you for who you are now. And hey, or, you know, just changing the subject to something that's more positive. They don't have that. They're just sitting there thinking on these negative things. And that can be hard on anyone, but especially with people who have really relied on that community setting. And now it just changed drastically almost overnight. I think we're going to see some pretty hefty changes in the mood of those people.
A dear friend of mine lives in a facility like yours in another state, and I remember speaking to him when COVID first started, and he thought, he literally said, oh, this is great. I don't have to go to dinner with all those people. They bring my food right to my room. I can just sit and read my books. It's wonderful. And then, you know, a few weeks or a month in, it hit him that, you know, he couldn't go visit his sister either, who lived in a room on a different wing of the same facility. And because of how they handled lockdown, he wasn't able to go there. And so, yeah, I mean, it hits everybody, whether you're introverted, whether you're extroverted. Hannah, what have you noticed in terms of people's different reactions to that kind of isolation?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Emily made some really good points, and it definitely is dependent on who the person is individually. But, you know, we've seen one extreme to the next. You know, I have seen residents that have never come to an activity because that's just, they're not a social person. They're not a social being. That's who they've always been. And after a year and a half of isolation and being on their own, now they're craving it. You know, we didn't realize until this pandemic necessarily how important that walk to Quick Trip was, to get a Diet Coke, just that interaction with the cashier for 10 seconds, or even the walk there and you bump into someone in the aisle and that starts a 5-minute conversation with this person you haven't seen for a while. We, I believe, took all those things for granted. And now we're, you know, after a year and a half of not having those conversations, I've seen people that are craving that human interaction. You know, we all fill our plates so much sometimes, and we overfill them. We're very good at that. And, you know, so it was a way to scale back, but we scaled back too much too quickly. And so now I'm seeing some of our older adults who are slowly trying to reintegrate and slowly bring back one thing at a time. And that's, you know, kind of what we're hoping for, is we're not trying to, you know, as the whole world, we're not just opening up everything again. We're slowly getting back to what was normal. And then again, you know, as Emily had mentioned, talking about the mental health aspect is, yeah, absolutely. We, you know, have residents that used to come to everything. And through the pandemic and the isolation, we saw a huge increase in depression and anxiety. You know, we know mental health is a big concern in our country. And, you know, we're continuously working on ways to improve that. But people that have never shown signs of anxiety before, you know, they sat in their room for, you know, or their home or their apartment or wherever they live, you know, for weeks, sometimes on end, without seeing or talking to another person, you know, they start to lose those social skills a little bit. And we start to see an increase in those memory concerns. You know, for someone that doesn't have a memory concern necessarily, well, every day you do the same thing. You make your eggs and toast for breakfast. You watch TV. You make a ham sandwich for lunch, and so on. You do the same thing over and over and over. Nothing is new. Nothing is exciting. Of course, we're not going to remember. It's the same thing we've done. And then we start to see a decline in the short-term memory loss.
Hannah, you mentioned as we were getting started, a lot of the different enrichment activities that you might engage in at a residential facility with older adults, some having memory issues, some just being in a facility that might provide better for their physical needs, regardless of their cognitive abilities. I wondered if you could focus in on one or two examples of enrichment activities that are particularly useful and help us understand, other than just it gets them doing something, what is it about those activities that makes them useful as enrichment tools?
One thing that in particular that we have started in our facility here at Eagle Crest South and throughout our corporation is something that we call a theme week. So with the uncertainty of knowing, you know, am I going to be able to have this program, or is this going to get canceled, or is this unit going to go on quarantine? We started doing this where 1 week a month, we create a theme. So we're actually in it right now. It's called our Week of Nations. So every day we have a theme of activities that is related to a different country. So Germany, Spain, Poland, wherever. And we plan all of the activities. So crafts, trivia, the classic board games that we might have you may have never heard of. Like there's a version of a German game called Sardines. It's basically our version of I Spy. And we have done these theme weeks because all of the activities that we plan, we can do individually or as a group. So first of all, we're not having to cancel anything. We just maybe have to tailor it a little bit depending upon the situation that we're in. By doing this, we can make sure that we're still hitting all of those areas I mentioned before. So, you know, today we're doing a Spanish trivia, which then leads into a reminiscent group about our travels and our days abroad. You know, we had our German day yesterday and we made these Alpine hats, and it brought back memories of wearing hats out, or, you know, the better times, as some would call them, and how the men would dress. And it just leads to these conversations about what life used to be like and how important it is to remember those things. So not only are we, you know, socializing in the moment, we're also reminiscing. We're recalling those facts that we might not have remembered. You know, maybe I didn't remember that men used to wear a certain hat style, but after this discussion, I did. So we're starting to recall some of those lost memories. Of course, we love our food here. That's people are generally food lovers. So we're, you know, getting we're looking to enhance our taste buds, you know. Oh my gosh, this tastes like, you know, a baked bread that my grandma used to make, and she, you know, came from Poland, and this reminds me of that. Of course, we have our spiritual activities. Those are something that we have never ceased to do, because as a corporation, in general, religion is super important, and we want to have a variety of offerings because we understand that not everyone is under the same religion. One of the best things I can say that we have brought back activity-wise, besides doing these theme weeks, and I shouldn't say they're all around nation, a week centered around different nations, but we have a carnival week. Our transitional care facility did, the week that the county fair was here, they had roller coaster rides and popcorn and carnival games and all of those fun things. And it just brought back the days of going to the fair. But then also just, we know how important touch is. And in a time where we can't touch other people, we can't, you know, go to hug our loved one or even offer a general handshake during an interview. We have started to be able to bring back the pet therapy teams, and that has been amazing. Studies have proven how important animal interaction is. And that is one of the best part of resident stays and our staff. Our staff enjoy our therapy teams just as much as our residents do. So that's truly been a joy to see.
That's Hannah Weiser. She's the Life Enrichment Coordinator with Eagle Crest South in La Crosse. Emily Wrights is also with us, a dementia care specialist at ADRC of Monroe County. And Emily, I'm going to start with you after this quick timeout because your organization is newly involved in a very interesting project involving music and how music can help memory patients and others as well. So we're going to talk about that after this timeout. If you'd like to hear part of our conversation today, or if you'd like to stream a previous episode of Newsmakers, you can find them all on our website, which is wpr.org/newsmakers. If you have a comment for the show, an observation you'd like to make, you can send an email to us. I'd love to hear from you. The email address is newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our southwestern Wisconsin studios. Thank you very much for joining us. We're talking about engaging older adults, particularly those in a communal living setting. And I'm joined by Emily Wrights and Hannah Weiser. Emily is with ADRC of Monroe County. Hannah is with Eagle Crest South in La Crosse. ADRC, by the way, stands for Aging and Disability Resource Center. So Emily, I wanted to talk to you starting this segment because your organization is using a program. It's not a new program, but it's new to you. It's called Music and Memory. When did you first hear of Music and Memory?
I first heard of Music and Memory a few years ago when I first started with the Aging and Disability Resource Center. I actually started in Jackson County and have now transitioned into Monroe County. And I was doing a lot of research on people living with dementia, what that might look like, how dementia affects our lives, how it affects caregivers, and different caregiving techniques for people living in their homes, when maybe it's time to consider looking about living outside the home. But among all of that research, I learned about the program Music and Memory from that nonprofit organization, Music and Memory. And it's just so fascinating because it came to me in the form of a YouTube video, and I was doing some training, quote unquote training. I was watching Tipa Snow videos. She's fascinating. I highly recommend her informative videos. And this video came up after on the autoplay that was about a gentleman named Henry, and he was living in a facility that had communal living with other adults who are having issues with memory. And they had mentioned that he has very little skills from when he was a younger adult. So even his communication skills had diminished. And they reached out and started utilizing the Music and Memory program and personalized a playlist for him with his daughter. And they put the headphones on him. And once that music that he recognized came on, he just came to life. It was like seeing him as a younger adult again. He was dancing, he was singing and humming. And not only that, he could answer questions that were beyond yes or no, whereas before he could not. So something about music really reaches deep inside of all of us and touches us in such a way that it can bring us out of that fog that becomes prevalent when a person is living with cognitive decline. So it's really just fascinating, and I'm so happy to be a part of it and be able to utilize it in our communities here in Monroe County.
So what's an example of a way that you would use music and memory in a setting, like from a practical point of view? Is it just simply a matter of like finding out the era that somebody would have been in their formative years and assembling music from that era, or is there a particular strategy to it?
I think that that's a good start, especially for those of us who didn't also grow up in that era. It shows us potentially what the popular songs were at the time. But I think that as music evolved and as society evolved, we have all sort of individualized our preferences. And so similar to myself and my husband, so he likes country music and I do not. And so if you were to try and have me listen to country music, I would not have the same reaction that he would to it. So I think that if that's what's popular at the time, starting there and finding what vein of music that they respond to is very important, because if you just set generic music in front of them, then it's probably not going to get the desired effect. And because the outcome is for them to really get something out of it. So if they're not connecting with that music, then are we really helping them?
So this is a program, obviously, that's designed for, since you're talking about this as though there's a lot of guesswork involved. So this is not, I'm assuming, people who are older and in a communal living setting, but who can perfectly well tell you what kind of music they like. This is geared more toward that audience of people who needs a little help remembering sort of the music that moves them.
Not necessarily.
Really?
It could be people who are nonverbal. And it's just a matter of, especially if they're in contact with their families can provide a lot of insight into what they like. So growing up, if mom sang specific hymns in the kitchen while she was cooking, or dad did, or there were specific songs that were hummed, or the radio was always on and it was always the oldies station, oldies. It's not necessarily what we want to call them, but to every kid, something is oldies.
Yeah. So to my niece and nephew, 90s music is oldies, and that makes me cringe.
I'll never get used to that. I remember being asked about classic rock, and I asked because I used to work with high school students.
You know,
from other
like
countries.
Billy Joel.
Yeah,
right.
I know, like Nirvana or Foo Fighters, and I got so red in the face because I was like, nope, that's not classic rock to me. That's just my modern rock, but okay.
So we know what's going to go on your playlist when you're
yeah,
in that
yeah.
position. Hannah, bringing you back into this conversation, we've been talking about how music can be used with memory patients and others who use that to connect to part of their lives. What ways do you see music being used in a communal living setting? I'm thinking of more like, you know, getting people to either sing together or opportunities that they might have to actually play a musical instrument. And what value does that have to enrichment in the adults that you serve?
Yeah, great question. We definitely encourage the use of music here at Eagle Crest Communities. And we here at Eagle Crest South in particular, we have pianos on almost every unit and then some in our common areas because we really want people to hone in on those skills. So a few examples of what we've used music for is we, of course, have entertainers that come in. We gather a group of people and they're able to socialize, and we have maybe someone, we'll use the example of, we have someone who comes in and does jazz music, and they will come in and they'll listen to a few songs and that'll prompt, oh, I used to love this. Maybe they know this song. And then sooner rather than later, they're shouting out all of these requests, and it just brings people closer together. They're feeling a part of a group again, and that, you know, they're all, you know, from the same time, and let's say they have similar experiences that they can share. Of course, with the COVID situation, we weren't able to do that. So some things that we did to utilize is we do have MP3 players that we would use for some of our residents. And we have residents that are very active, both with memory decline and without. So we would, you know, you want to go for a walk on the walking trail, but that can be really quiet sometimes, but you want to get outside and walk. Let's pop on your headphones and listen to maybe some classic or modern rock, whatever you want to call it. And that's just that motivator to get out and get moving. And then we've also seen the opposite, where we have someone with cognitive decline and they're a fall risk, and we really need them not to be walking on their own when it's not safe. So we put headphones and we have that classical music, that jazz music, and that soothes them. And sooner rather again than later, they're sitting down and they're relaxed and they're calm. And guess what we just did? We just eliminated the use of a medication that we didn't have to use because music could do that for them.
That sounds amazing. Of course, music isn't the only art form that inspires people and can make that important connection between, you know, all different aspects of our mental activity. Emily, what other ways do you use arts activities in I don't want to say treatment, but really in helping people live their best life?
That's a good way to put it too, is helping them live their best life. I really enjoy utilizing things that they enjoyed doing when they were, you know, younger adults or even when they were children, because that can really spark some memories or spark just joy in general, so that they're not just existing. We want them to truly live. We don't want them just to be there and be, I don't know, we don't want them to feel like they're just taking up space. We want them to know that they're a person, they're cared for. So some of the things that we like to use, did they like to paint? We have some watercolors that people will use. There's those pages of, I'm not sure how to describe them, I'm sorry. They're like watercolor pages, but instead of using paints to make it kind of mess free, it's just water that you can put on the page and it comes into this beautiful picture. And so people are creating, but then when it dries, it becomes that piece of paper again. So you can reuse it over and over again. I think they're called water doodles. And so creating that joy and letting them feel like they're doing something with a purpose is really important. But aside from music, there's also, you know, just making sure they feel like they have a purpose with having them do something like folding clothes. That, ask anyone, that can be an art form in and of itself. I mean, everybody folds differently.
Art form? I don't know if I've heard it called an art form before. I've heard it called a pain before.
It is, but also, have you ever had someone tell you you're folding something wrong?
Yes.
Yep, there you go.
Okay.
It's just different methods. So, but making them know that they have a purpose is really important. And so using art to do that it's an incredible resource that anyone really can use. Just go to the dollar store and get some Crayola watercolors and boom, there you go. We also have some adult coloring books, those relaxation coloring pages for adults that have these really intricate mandala designs or nature designs. And you can use anything from crayons, markers, colored pencils, anything like that. And they're just so useful in helping people calm down, but also maintain that creativity that everyone really has inside of them.
Well, this has been a really interesting conversation. I want to offer each of you an opportunity to give some information about how your organizations can be contacted if people feel like they might need to use the resources that you provide. I know you're each in a little bit different context. Hannah, let's start with you. You're with Eagle Crest, which is a corporate entity in our town that offers residential services. How can people find more information about Eagle Crest?
Absolutely. We are available online. Our website is www.eaglecrestlife.org. We are also on Facebook and Instagram. For those that maybe aren't as tech savvy, we would love to have a phone conversation with you. You can give us a call at 608-791-2702. Otherwise, you can stop on by. We are located right behind Gunderson Hospital.
All right. Emily writes with the ADRC of Monroe County. How can somebody get in touch with ADRC there? I mean, there's ADRCs all over and in most counties, or at least many counties. How can people get in touch with the services available in Monroe County?
Well, if people want to look at what services we offer, they can go to our website, and that is co.monroe.wi.us, and all you have to do is look for the ADRC in the top of the department section, and they can look at everything we have to offer. Or you can call our main number. It's 608-269-8690, and you can get to whatever resources you need from us throughout Monroe County, or if you even just have any questions about what the resources in Monroe County are. We have a wide range of people that we serve, and we're here to help, and we just want to help however we can to get people connected to the resources that they need in their life to make it easier for them.
And I suppose one way to go about it, if maybe even if you don't live in Monroe County, would be to, if you have internet access, just Google ADRC Monroe County, or ADRC whatever county you do live in, or ADRC near me, or any of those ideas that sort of self-populate when you start typing into search engines.
Yeah, I also serve Jackson County.
Okay.
So there's a lot of information there too. And we have different things, like I have a dementia loan closet for caregivers and for people living with dementia. So there's all kinds of programs that we're starting and getting out into the community. So if anyone has any questions, they can always reach out.
That really sounds great. Emily Wrights, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Hannah Weiser, thank you as well.
Thank you for having me.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like more information about our show, you can find it on our website. That's wpr.org/newsmakers. Or feel free to email us, newsmakers@wpr.org. Up next, we're talking about how you can become a foster grandparent. So stay tuned. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our studios in La Crosse. Thank you very much for joining us today. I am super interested in this segment. It's a concept that made me excited when I read about it, which is foster grandparents. That sounds like such a great idea. And we've got an actual foster grandparent here with us today. And we're talking to someone who helps coordinate a local foster grandparents operation as well. Joining us are Cindy Deckert, who's the director of foster grandparents for Southwestern Wisconsin Community Action Program. Cindy, welcome to Newsmakers. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Also joining us is Sally Vivian, who is from Westby and is a foster grandparent in the Westby school system. And she is a previous Jefferson Award winner, and this year is a Governor's Service Award winner. And Sally, we are so pleased to have you join us. Thank you very much.
Well, I appreciate being here and able to promote the program.
Tell me about you. You've been a foster grandparent working with kids there in the Westby School District for about 20 years, give or take. Tell me about how you first found out about the program.
Well, actually, I had been previously working down in Florida with the child care program, and I was in a school that used the foster grandparents. And so when I came back to Wisconsin, the first thing I did was look up the program here. And at the time, we didn't have one. And then about the year 2000, the program was introduced in La Crosse. And I inquired about it, but because of the required hours, I couldn't attend until 2002. A coordinator came to the Parkside High Rise and was giving a talk on it. And I immediately signed up in March of 2002, and I've been with them ever since.
So what kind of things do you do as a foster grandparent? What are your main responsibilities?
Is to follow the teacher's directions. They go and check the kids' test results, and if a child needs a little extra help or a little one-on-one, they will say, "Grandma, would you like to read with so-and-so for maybe 15 minutes today?" and help them with wherever they need help. And I not only help with reading, but I've helped with math and spelling. But mostly it's to give them one-on-one attention and let them open up, feel more comfortable about reading, build their self-esteem at what they're doing. And they have become such great readers now and have gotten interested also in reading a lot more.
Cindy Deckert, who is a director with the whole program, how many foster grandparents do you have in your area?
Our agency covers 8 counties for the foster grandparent, and we picked up Vernon County and Crawford County and Sauk, in addition to our area, which is Green, Iowa, Lafayette, Richland, and Grant. So in that area, it varies. We have anywhere from 25. Everybody agrees it's a great program. It's a hidden gem. It's a federal program, but it is a hidden gem that not everyone knows about.
So when people hear about, when you get to tell people about it for the first time, or when people call you for information, what do you tell them to get them involved?
Well, the first thing is we have this branding issue, because foster grandparents actually started, I think, before foster care. So folks are thinking that as an older adult, you have to be 55 and older, and that's set by some federal regulations that we're going to have to bring children into our home. And it's not really that. Foster grandparents go into, across the nation, different areas, public schools, faith-based schools, after school programs, not-for-profit child care, hospice, YMCAs. Here in Southwest Wisconsin, we're mainly schools.
So, Sally, when you're working with these children, you said you can have several of them at a time. How much time do they spend with you in, you know, let's say somebody gets sent to your club and they're going to spend some time with you. Is that like 5 or 10 minutes, or do they spend a good chunk of the morning with you? How does it work?
Well, I start in the morning usually. This past year, I'll go by that. In the morning, I took 6 third grade children, and we did a reading for half an hour. And then I would go to, say, preschool and help them get ready for going home and getting ready for the next afternoon group. Then after lunch, it was going to take 6 first grade kids and work with them for half an hour, 30 to 35 minutes, and then take second grade kids for half an hour. But generally it's a half an hour to 40 minutes with each group, because if we're doing, say, a chapter book, I want to be sure that each child has the time to get a quality reading done. And then there's always question time. Why did this person do that? Or where is this location? So we will also do research. And I'll get out the encyclopedias, and we'll go on the laptop and maybe look up these different locations. Or I will bring a map, and we'll, like we did Laura Ingalls Wilder, they wanted to know where in Dakota they were from and that. So I try to incorporate research and a lot of questions with our stories. It's so that they understand reality and what's happened before them. I like to encourage them also with reading to talk to your grandparents or your great-grandparents if you have them, and ask them about this particular period that we're reading about, and try to encourage them to hear the stories from their own grandparents and great-grandparents. So it's a learning process for them in a different way than in the classroom.
I want to mention again that you're one of this year's recipients of the Governor's Service Award. You've been dedicated to this program a long time, and people who do something for 20 years obviously don't do it for awards or anything like that. But what does it feel like to be honored like that by Governor Evers?
It was amazing. The reward that I get from the children is all the awards that I ever wanted. But to get recognized by your peers, by people, that a person that I probably will never meet, and people that feel that I'm worth this award, it's heart-wrenching because I don't expect any rewards other than maybe a hug or two now and then, and I've gotten plenty of those through the 20 years.
You must have kids now whose parents were in school when you started this.
Well, an interesting story. One of my children that I had way back in the beginning is now teaching, and last year I helped her in her classroom.
Oh, wow.
And I think there's another one coming back this year. I'm not really sure, but I can't believe how progressive these kids and how well they've done for their community and for themselves and for the world. I mean, it's just wonderful to see how another good example would be a fourth grader before school was out this last year wrote me a letter all on his own. It wasn't a school classroom project, and thanked me for the time I spent reading with him, because now he's comfortable in reading chapter books and more progressive stories other than in the classroom. And that really touched me, because I know I've succeeded at what I was expected to do. The boys always used to tell me, "Grandma, why do I need to learn this? Dad is a carpenter. He doesn't do any reading. Dad's a fireman. He don't need to read. My dad drives the truck. What does he need to do math?" And when I can personally show them, not just on paper, that these and through stories, they can see how important reading and math can be. And that really encourages them. And then they go on to read and read, and they're reading really interesting stories, not just comic book type stories. They're reading more on history. They're reading more about what's going on in the world today, because this is part of the next generation that's going to be coming up soon. And they're seeing and understanding the importance of what we do. I'm there to listen. I'm just rewarded by their thanks, by their hugs, by their gratitude, and especially when a parent or a grandparent will email me and say, "Oh, thank you so much. My granddaughter was excited today because she got to read with you." So nothing is more fulfilling in life for me at this point in life. And that's why the program is so important, because at our age, we started at 62, I believe, Cindy, and then we lowered it to 55 now. So it opened the door for a lot of widows and a lot of single or elderly ladies, or even if they're, well, some of them are still married. I know the husband and wife also are grandparents at the same time in school. So it has its rewards that you can't even put words to.
Well, you have absolutely sold the program, and so now I want to give people an opportunity to learn where they can find information. So, Cindy, let's start with the program that you're affiliated with there at Southwest CAP. Tell me how people can get in touch with your organization if they're within the listening area, the part of our listening area that is a part of your region.
And exactly that. It's not available everywhere in the United States. I wished it was. And if I can quickly say that Sally's award was American Seniors Lifetime Impact Volunteer Award. It was a Governor's Service Award. And hopefully when you listen to Sally, you can see why. It's a good thing we're in a separate room because there's tears in my eyes. And it's someone that has done this for at least 15 years and made significant contributions to Wisconsin.
That's
Sally.
Yep.
So people that are interested in the program, and you can call our toll-free number at our agency. And if you're not able to, if it's not within our service area, then I will try to find a program for you. So our number is 1-800-704-8555, and my extension is 209. And again, people think, well, that's in Dodgeville. But again, we cover the 8 counties, so I'm on the road quite a bit. Or you can always look up, this is an AmeriCorps program. It's a federal program. So you can always go to www.americorps.gov and get some information there.
What I did yesterday is I went to AmeriCorps.gov, and then I went in the search bar and just searched for foster grandparents, and all the information that I needed just came right up.
Yes, it's a very good website. And of course, even Southwest CAP, if you go into our website, if you just Google foster grandparents, usually something comes up. Again, it's that branding issue where people are thinking that we must have to have children in our home. And it really, as Sally talked, she's under the supervision of a teacher. And of course, Sally's been at this for a while. And if you're thinking, gosh, she really gets into this reading club, well, that's what makes her so impactful. But when you're first starting out, just listening to a child read and just ask the child, what did you like about the story? Mm-hmm. Some simple things that help them think about what was the purpose of the story. So although Sally's just an awesome, we have people at the other end of the spectrum that maybe aren't as comfortable asking those questions, but it's just as important that they're helping kids with worksheets. We have kids that might have dysgraphia. I know one child where the foster grandparent only held up 3 fingers, which meant that the student should get into a 3-point grip on their pen or pencil or crayon. No other student knew what was going on, but that student learned to have better writing skills and fine motor skills because of that. So that I can't tell someone that's coming into the program what exactly they'd be doing, except that you'll be working under the supervision of a teacher. You might be in a classroom, all one classroom. You might switch off like Sally does. It depends on the school's needs. We do require at least about 5 to 7 hours average a week, but it can go up to 40. And so it's this is a volunteer program that we want to work for you, and we want your schedule to meet the school's needs. So sometimes we kind of barter back and forth to see what is the most important need and if that volunteer is available at that time.
And reading is also taught in different stages. If a child can't particularly read one way, there's the echo system. There's where we take turns reading to each other. So when you're reading, before I start with children, even I will talk to the teacher, what they see and what they feel the child needs. Do they need more phonics before they actually read, or do they need more time just listening to me read to them? So there's a variety of ways of doing reading, and the same works with math. I may do math the old-fashioned way, not the new method, and it helps them to pick up the new way then. So you've got to work with the teacher, and I've had fabulous teachers and principals to work with, and they will share with you so much. So I'm also learning. I'm learning things I didn't know when I was working with my kids. So this program opens up a big door for parents who can't particularly just always help their kids with homework or anything. So it's just an extension. And it's also an extension of a grandparent. I was amazed to find children that don't have grandparents. Or don't remember their grandparents. So the connection of grandparents I've learned through the years is very, very important, especially for the younger children.
It sounds like such a wonderfully collaborative program on so many levels, and I'm so grateful to both of you for sharing it with us today on Newsmakers. Cindy Deckert is the director of Foster Grandparents for Southwest CAP, and that's, again, an AmeriCorps seniors program, and I thank you very much, Cindy, for being here and for sharing about the program today. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And Sally Vivian of Wesby is a foster grandparent going on 20 years now in the Wesby Elementary School, and Sally, thank you very much for sharing your experiences with us and for letting people know what you've benefited and how students have benefited from you, and congratulations again on the service award that you've received this year.
Well, thank you for having me. This is something I've wanted for a long time, to get the word out more. I think down the road we're going to hopefully see more grandparents get involved with other grandchildren besides their own, and to see how helpful it is.
Sounds like a great idea to me. If you'd like to listen to part of this conversation again, you can find it on our website, which is wpr.org/newsmakers. There are a couple of opportunities each week to hear our program. It originates on Friday mornings at 10 on the Ideas Network 90.3. We repeat Friday evenings at 7 on NPR News and Music 88.9. Our producer is Dawn Jewell. Thank you very much for listening this week. You can always find our show online at wpr.org/newsmakers. And until next week, this is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio.